All right, we will go ahead and get started. So if you will all join me, Pastor Beck is going to pray for us, and then Garrett is going to say the pledge. So we'll start with prayer, and then the pledge, and then we'll lay out some ground rules. For Harriet.
Let's pray. Heavenly Father, we thank this time together. We thank you for Representative Hayden. We pray for the head protection around her. We pray that you would also help us represent our community well, and that you would just help us to learn what we need to learn tonight. We ask this in Christ's name.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Just one other note, we're going to do a media poll aside afterwards, so if you have any questions from the press, we'll do that. And then we're going to try to take our last question around 8 o'clock. So I'll be the grump at the back of the room and cuts everyone off. Otherwise, we'll let Harriet have at it.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you, Trinity. Thank you. Thank you. And it's wonderful to be here. This is my 7th town hall since I took office in January. This is the 7th county that I've come to specifically for a town hall, but I've had meetings all over the state of Wyoming. It's been an incredible honor to represent the state back in Congress, and I appreciate your support, I appreciate your vote, and I appreciate everything that is going on here. I'm going to go over a couple of things, just give you some background information, let you know what's been happening in D.C., and then I'm going to open it up to questions. First of all, I want to talk a little bit about the speaker's vote. And I know that that was a couple months ago, but I know that people are still curious about it. But it's also I also want to talk about it because there are some things really positive that have come out of that. First of all, for those of you who watched it, it may have looked a bit messy. We ended up having 15 votes for the speaker, which is the first time, I think, since the 1830s or 40s. So it's been a long time since we've had to go through that process. But the fact is, it was a really good process to go through. We're a republic. We are a representative form of government. Our First Amendment to the United States Constitution gives us our voice and our ability to engage and debate and talk about the important issues of the time. And the reality is actually since John Boehner, there has been very little debate in Washington. John Boehner was not a good speaker. John Boehner ran everything with an iron fist. He didn't allow debate or discussion. He just basically issued orders from on high out of the speaker's office. And I'd like to say that he was the worst one, but he wasn't. Paul Ryan was even worse. And I know I'm speaking ill of Republicans, but I'm going to call people out when they do things that are not aligned with the Republican Party. Both of those two gentlemen were damaging to the Republican Party, but Nancy Pelosi was even worse. What I understand in visiting with the people who have been in the House for the last, 4, 6, 8, 10 years, the Republican Party for the last 4 years has had absolutely no voice in our government whatsoever. No debate, no open debate on the floor. It wasn't allowed. Every bill came out of the Speaker's house. The Democrats voted for it. There was no discussion. They didn't allow discussion in the committees. The Republicans were seriously disenfranchised for the last 4 years, and it was a dictatorship. And I'm going to tell you, people got pretty tired of it, and that's part of what you saw play out in January. Something that I've learned since I've been back in Congress is that we don't spend a lot of time together. When you go down here to Cheyenne, there are desks on the floor of the House and the Senate, and they sit together and they talk. And you'll watch two people get up and go over into a side area and have some debate and discussion. But there's an opportunity for people to engage with each other. Back in Washington, D.C., the way the Congress is run is that's not what it is. We don't spend a lot of time together. When we vote, we go in and we might be there for half an hour. Other than that, we're in our offices, which is pretty rare. We're in committee hearings. We're in meetings. We're having, maybe fundraisers or different things. But we don't spend a lot of time with each other. And as a result, the people in Congress don't really know each other. And I think that that's been a real detriment because they have been able to dehumanize each other for quite some time. Well, what happened when we did those votes was there were 15 votes, and each of them took about 90 minutes. So we were together for almost 25 hours over a 4-day period. And it gave us an opportunity to talk about ourselves. It gave us an opportunity to talk about our families and our states and who we represented and what our agendas were and what our goals were. From my standpoint, I think it set me up in a very good way to talk about what my agenda was back in, is in Washington, D.C., and why. And I came out of that pretty much getting everything that I wanted in terms of my committee assignments, as well as being able to work with some of the leadership on pushing forward with an agenda that I think is in the best interest of Wyoming and the best interest of the country as a whole. I otherwise would have just been yet another freshman. And by doing this, by having those 25 hours, we have bonded in a way that we've actually become a more cohesive conference. We've become a more conservative conference.
Yay.
And I'm going to tell you something else. I truly believe that Kevin McCarthy is going to be a good speaker. I have agreed with every decision that he has made so far. And he has done well. And I think that without that, I'm not sure he would have been quite as conservative as he has been in terms of releasing the January 6th tapes. All of it, just putting it out there. We talked to him. I will tell you that part of the reason that I voted for him from the beginning is that I had talks with him before we even went in there on January 3rd. And he had agreed to make some extremely important changes to our rules before we went in there. And in exchange for that, I agreed to support him as speaker. Some of those rules included that we now can do amendments from the floor. And they haven't done that for 10 years. They haven't had amendments from the floor. I think it was our second week we were back there. We went through, and it was an important bill about energy production, energy development. And the Democrats put on 150 amendments. But another rule that was made is that these amendments have to be germane, and all of our bills have to be single subject. So we have made clear, no more omnibus spending bills. We have sent a message to the Senate. Don't send it over. It is DOA. So our bills now, if you go online, if you go on the House website and you look at the bills, our bills are 1, 2, 3 pages long. They're not 100. Now, there will be some that are more complicated. One that dropped today is going to be a bit more complicated, and I'll talk about it in a minute. But our bills are very easy to understand. They're single subject. And of those 150 amendments that the Democrats dropped on that energy bill, only 48 were found to be germane. The other were thrown out. They didn't have anything to do with it. And so when we went in, some of the other changes that have been made is that no more proxy voting. If you're going to be in Congress, you need to show up and do your job. So what was happening under Nancy Pelosi is that they wouldn't come to the floor. Her party wouldn't come to the floor. And so they would leave a vote open for 2, 3, 4 hours at a time. You'd go in there and vote on something and nothing would happen until she got enough votes drug in there to pass whatever bill it was. We're doing 2-minute bills. So those amendments, those 48 amendments, we did 24 one day and 24 the next, and we did them in 2 minutes. We get a 1-minute warning, and you have to pay a lot of attention to what's going on. You have to understand what the amendment is about. You've got 2 minutes, and man, they slammed that gavel down in 2 minutes. So we're running a much tighter ship. We know exactly where we need to be when. We know what bills are up, what amendments are up. And those are some of the changes to the rules that were so important related to the election of Speaker McCarthy. Some of the other rule changes are, like I said, no more proxy voting. And we also are going to go forward under regular order. It has been years since Congress actually passed the 12 appropriations bills so that we can then submit a budget that has to be voted on by the end of September. We will be doing our 12 appropriation bills. We will be doing a budget. We will land that on the Senate's desk. So those are some of the other things that are moving forward right now. In fact, when I go back next week, I'm going to be doing some training on the appropriations process so that I know exactly, number one, how it works, but also so that I can get priorities in there for the state of Wyoming. So what I want to tell you is that I know that we had some criticism, and I know sometimes the press wanted to beat us up. We couldn't even get a speaker elected. The process worked the way it is supposed to work. Everybody was involved. People got to have their voices heard, and that was incredibly important, not only for all of us, but for the people watching. So I just wanted to touch on that real quickly. As far as my committees, I have been appointed to the Judiciary Committee and the Natural Resource Committee. Those were my two choices. Those were my two choices. On the Judiciary Committee, I'm on the Constitutional and Civil Rights Subcommittee, and I am also on the Regulatory Reform Committee. And so for those of you who have been listening to me talk for the last couple decades about regulation in this country, we had our first hearing last week, and it was incredibly, incredibly enlightening to listen to the Democrats basically say, we do not believe in separation of powers. We do not believe that our Constitution is the way that it ought to work, where it is Congress that makes the laws. They believe that it is the, quote, experts, like Anthony Fauci, I guess you say. It is the experts that should be making the laws. And so we had our first hearing last week on that. It was really fascinating. I would encourage you to go watch the videotape. I learned a lot. So I'm on those two subcommittees with Judiciary, and then on Natural Resources, I've been appointed as the chairman of the Subcommittee on Indian and Insular Affairs. So I will help oversee all 574 tribes and our five territories. So it is Guam, American Samoa, Northern Mariana Islands, and then Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands. There's a lot going on with those, especially in the South Pacific, because China is really trying to move in with their Belt and Road program, trying to provide funding. Some of those islands are some of the most important in terms of strategy, where they are strategically placed, where they are located, in terms of being able to keep China in check. And this is the 20th anniversary of an agreement that needs to be renegotiated with some of those islands as well as a few others. It's basically a mutual defense agreement where we provide funding to those islands for the protection and then their protection as well as access. That's where our military bases are. So we will be working on that as well. And then my other subcommittee on in natural resources is water. Which obviously makes sense with what I do. So we had a water hearing last week as well. Obviously, I'm someone who believes in infrastructure and protecting our infrastructure, maintaining our infrastructure, but also building additional infrastructure. One of the things that we desperately need to do is California is going to have to step up to the plate and start building infrastructure. They have essentially the same water infrastructure in place today with 40 million people as they had in the 1960s with 16 million people. So that's why you see the strains and stresses on the Colorado River. No, it's not global warming. No, it's not climate change. California just keeps taking more and more and more water, and they refuse to build their own infrastructure. So that's something we're going to have to push there. As far as the last subcommittee that I'm on, it's not a subcommittee, I have been appointed as the only freshman on the Select Committee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government. We've had two hearings there, both of them on the First Amendment so far. Our first hearing, we had Senator Johnson and Grassley come in and testify about the FBI's efforts to stop their investigation into the Hunter Biden laptop. We had Tulsi Gabbard and the abuse that she has suffered at the hands of these federal agencies. And then last week, if you haven't watched it, I would encourage you to watch it. We had Matt Taibbi and Schellenberger, and it was about the Twitter files and the suppression and the effort to block anything related to the election, to COVID-19, all of the information, and the FBI's efforts to completely compromise these social media companies. The reason I would encourage you to watch it is because there were some pretty important admissions made during the course of that hearing. The Democrats do not believe in the First Amendment, and they made that clear. They not only don't believe in our right to speak, they don't believe in our right to hear, they don't believe in our right to freedom of religion. They went after these two admittedly Democrat witnesses who both voted for Joe Biden, but their crime is that they have been willing to expose what was going on with Twitter. The FBI one of the points that I made during the course of this was that the FBI has essentially took over Twitter, and whoever they disagreed with, they would send them lists of hundreds of names saying these people are violating your term of service. Well, if I enter into a contract with you, if you are providing me a service and you have a term of service, I comply with that with you. That's a contract between us. The FBI has absolutely no authority whatsoever to enforce a contract. In addition to which, the First Amendment is much broader than the terms of service. So that was the point that I made during this, is how in the world, when you read the text messages, the emails, the other things that they were sending back and forth to Twitter, one of the words that the FBI never used was to say any of those tweets were illegal, or that they violated the law, or that they put national security at risk. They never made that claim. Every claim they made was, this violates your term of service. So they have been exposed. They're going to continue to be exposed. We're going to continue to hold additional hearings. I know we're going to go after surveillance. The surveillance state right now is unbelievable. We were just talking on our way in. I just read today, and it was a headline. I haven't even had a chance to read the article yet, but the FBI has been collecting data on gun owners and gun sales. I believe that's a violation of both the Second and the Fourth Amendment. They have absolutely no right to do that. We need to be looking into that. We also have got to get to the bottom of the Wuhan virus. Now, there is a committee that is looking into that. We have to get into the bottom of that. We have to find out where it came from so that it never happens again. I mean, it is just imperative that we find out what happened. We also have to get out, we have to find out to what extent Anthony Fauci was being dishonest with the American people.
Yeah. Everything he said.
Yes. Now, one of the things, I saw him yesterday being interviewed on CNN, and I think he probably realizes that the walls are closing in. He looks pretty rough. And we've got to get to the bottom of that. We have to get to the bottom of some of the stuff associated with the vaccines.
Yes.
To what extent did they know? The woman from, I believe it was from Moderna, admitted at a hearing in England that they never looked at the effectiveness of the vaccine itself, that was not what they were studying. So there's a lot of stuff that continues to need to be reviewed. I'm not involved in all of that. With the weaponization committee, we are focusing specifically on ways in which the government, whether it is the FBI or backdoor ways that the CIA is looking internally, looking at domestic issues rather than foreign. There's a lot of stuff to unpack. There are quite a few whistleblowers that are coming forward. I have not spoken to them myself, but we do have quite a few whistleblowers who have been willing to come forward and talk about what is going on with the FBI and some things that need to be exposed. Under our form of government, this government is up by and for the people. It doesn't belong to the government, it belongs to us. We have the right to hold people accountable when they do things that they should not be doing. And that is what I believe this weaponization committee is going to be, it will be doing. So far, there's quite a bit that has been exposed, and I would encourage you to continue watching it. The other thing is, on our judiciary committee, we went down to the border 2 weeks ago. We went down on a Wednesday. We went to the border at about 12:30 at night, 1 o'clock in the morning. We went to an area that was very interesting to me. It was a section of the fence. There's about 50 foot that has not been completed. And they refer to that as a hot spot, as you can imagine why. But one of the things that was interesting to me is that the border patrol or local sheriff's deputy that I was talking to, I don't remember which he was, he said that they found about 200 bodies right on the other side of the fence. And I said, well, who are they? Because it's, you know, not exposure or anything like that. You can't cross the border without going through the cartels. Mm. You will get killed. You cannot cross the border without going through the cartels. They're making about $13 billion. They've made about $13 billion in human trafficking so far. They pointed out the rape tree, where the women who are coming through are subjected to that. One of the other things that they talked about is that there are now price lists, that the cartels have put together price lists. So if you're from India, I'm not going to have the exact numbers, But if you're from India, it might be $21,000 to cross the border. If you're from China, it might be $50,000 to cross the border. If you're from Guatemala, it might be $6,000 to cross the border. But they don't pay that amount. What it is they pay a portion of it, and then they commit to go where the cartels are sending them in the United States, and they either have to engage in human trafficking, sex trafficking, or drug running. Those are that is the way that they are. It's modern day slavery. The people who are coming across the border are enslaved to the cartels. It is one of the most tragic things I've ever seen. We went and visited with a lot of the farmers. I have never been to Yuma before, but it is an incredible oasis. It's just absolutely beautiful. About 100,000 people. A lot of our food for human consumption is raised in Yuma. So celery, broccoli, onion, cauliflower, all different kinds of crops. And they've just been invaded. Those fields go right up to the wall, right up to the border, and they're just absolutely being invaded. We met with the hospital staff. $26 million in uncompensated care so far for illegals in the last 2 years. They told us a couple of things that were very interesting. One is you can't release a baby out of the hospital, and their NICU unit has been full. If you live there, you oftentimes have to go to Phoenix or another hospital because there are no beds in the Yuma hospital. They had one little baby in there for 90 days. So these women are coming. They've had no prenatal care whatsoever. They're giving birth, and they've got some really high-risk pregnancies and babies. They can't release those babies unless they have a car seat. So they had to go in and buy up all the car seats in the entire area. So if you live there, you can't get a car seat. But here's the irony of that. These people don't have cars.
Yeah.
So it is just, it is one thing after the next, after the next, after the next, after the next. We then had a hearing, and we had a sheriff's deputy, the gentleman from the hospital, and a local leader come and testify. And the way that I approached it was I was near the last because I'm the freshman, so I'm always kind of at the end of anything that we do. And I just said, so over 2 days, I took a lot of notes. And I said, there were over 200 people in the audience, and I addressed myself to the audience, and I said, do you feel like you've been forgotten? Do you feel that nobody cares? And they said, yes. And it was very emotional. And they said, nobody cares. We have been forgotten. Nobody is taking care of us. And what we're dealing with is incredibly tragic. And I said, well, we care. And I said, I will give you voice. And so I just started reading from my notes and all of the things that we'd learned, because I knew we were on national TV. And I want people to hear their voices and what they're going through. So that was very interesting. None of the other side came to the hearing. They won't come down there. They won't come down, which is that's a huge disappointment to all of us, because we do think that this should be a bipartisan issue. So those are some of the things that I have done in terms of just working on my committees. I'll give you an idea and a flavoring of some of the bills that I've either co-sponsored or sponsored that I have introduced, and then some of the work I've done for our Native populations. One of the first votes we took was repealing the funding for the 87,000 IRS agents.
Yes.
So we will continue to do that through the budget. We will continue to do that through the budget. Obviously, right now, we would have to get the Senate and the President to sign it. But when our budget is not going to include the funding for those 87,000 IRS agents. We voted a bipartisan bill. Joe Biden has raided the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, as many of you know. It's now down over 40%. It is the lowest point since the 1980s. The reason it's the lowest point since the 1980s is that's when we were filling it. It takes 9 years to fill the SPR.
Wow.
9 years. He's been selling SPR oil to China. So we passed a bipartisan bill with 100 Democrats supporting it to block him from being able to sell SPR oil to China. We do believe that that will pass in the Senate and is going to land on his desk. We'll see if he vetoes it or not. But that is a really important piece of legislation to stop the raiding of our SPR. And for anybody in the field, I don't know if you saw, but he had initially promised he would start refilling the SPR in January. He is not refilling the SPR because gas prices are too high. Oil prices are too high and we can't afford it. So right now, we're in a situation where we're at less than 60% full in our SDR. Another bill is that for anybody in the future who attempts to take oil out of the SPR, they have to have a plan of action of how they're going to refill it. And that's a related bill. We are trying to block the new navigable waters of the U.S. rule. The EPA has yet come out with a radical land grab on the WOTUS rule, taking out the word navigable entirely and just basically saying any puddle of water is jurisdictional under the Clean Water Act. We're trying to block that. I have also, with Cynthia Lummis, I introduced Protecting Our Wealth of Energy Resources, the POWER Act, and it's in response to President Biden's actions which have terminated energy and mineral production on federal lands. The POWER Act requires the president and federal agencies to obtain the approval of Congress before prohibiting or delaying new energy, coal, or mineral leases or permits on federal lands. I also introduced a bill on the Grizzly Bear State Management Act that directs the Secretary of Interior to remove the Greater Yellowstone ecosystem population of grizzly bears from the federal list of endangered and threatened species. And I actually think that's going to pass. We've got bipartisan support in the Senate, and so I think it's going to pass, and I think we're going to get the grizzly bears delisted. And then I also did a bill to end the existing moratorium on new coal leasing and to direct the Secretary of Interior to take action on coal leasing applications that are pending at DOI. Other pieces of legislation that I've co-sponsored: Protecting Our Women and Girls in Sports Act.
Thank you.
It was finally done at the state, but we're doing it federally as well. A Parents' Bill of Rights Act. No Registry Rights Act, which would limit the ability of the ATF to use its existing authority to create a federal firearms registry with firearm transaction records. We're trying to stop the CRT nonsense in the military. Education choice, we're pushing forward with an education choice bill. Protect our farmers from the SEC. This has to do with all the new banking regulations that require both upstream and downstream information about emissions. We're trying to block that. The EPA does not have the authority under the Clean Water Act to do it. The SEC does not have the authority to do that. But we've also introduced another bill on that. Defund EcoHealth Alliance. EcoHealth Alliance was involved in Wuhan. They were the ones that received the grants from Anthony Fauci, and they have continued to receive millions and millions and millions of dollars from the NIH and CDC, and we are going to try to defund EcoHealth Alliance. I co-sponsored a bill to audit the Fed, the Federal Reserve, and in light of what recently happened in the last week, that's something that needs to happen. The last thing that I would say is I introduced a bill. So right now, our tribes cannot lease their land for longer than 25 years with only limited exceptions. And if they try to seek their land, so as a result, you can't have economic development that's going to require hard infrastructure, because you're not going to put up a mall or a theater or out in Oregon trying to get a distillery. You're not going to get hard infrastructure built if they can't enter into a lease for longer than 25 years. So I introduced a bill to allow our tribes to enter into leases for 99 years. And so, my counterpart on the Democrat side on that subcommittee, well, they're called the ranking member, she has signed on as a co-sponsor, as has the ranking member of the Natural Resource Committee as a whole. So I am very optimistic that we are going to get it through our subcommittee, the committee, the House of Representatives, the Senate, and I believe that it will be signed by Joe Biden. So I'm very excited about that. We had some tribes come in a couple weeks ago and testify, and one of them testified that they have been trying to get one permit for 14 years, and another permit for 22 years. Mm-hmm. And going through the BIA and the Department of Interior, it takes them decades to get approval for projects. We need this for our tribes. My view is the private property and the ability for them to lease their trust lands is going to help with economic development, give them more autonomy from the federal government, allow them to better manage their resources in the federal government, and the BIA shouldn't be in the middle of this anyway.
Right.
So that was that's a bill I'm extremely proud of. The gentleman who is largely behind it is a guy named Ken Degenfelder. And he is the brother of Megan Degenfelder right here in Wyoming. He's from Wyoming, and he is he's one of the primary staffers on our subcommittee on Indian and Insular Affairs. And he has just done a phenomenal job. I'm really, really proud of him and really excited to work with him. So I want to make sure that he gets credit for that. So anyway, with that, I'll open it up for questions and comments. And yes, sir.
First off, thank you for coming to Buffalo again.
Yes.
So you threw out a lot of stuff there. One of the things I didn't hear is anything about the January 6th prisoners who are still in jail, with the Judiciary Committee or...
Yes, that. But I think what you're going to see is both. Okay. So with the release of the videotapes,
right.
I know that there are people going through that, both looking at it from the standpoint of the Weaponization Committee as well as the Judiciary Committee. And we can't get in to see the January 6th prisoners. One of my fellow freshmen, Eli Crane, attempted to go in last week, and I just read an article today saying that he was not allowed in to see them. So I think that what you're going to, the dam has broken, and you're going to, hopefully, we're going to start seeing where some of these people will be able to get a fair trial or be released because of violation of the Brady Amendment. So the gentleman that they refer to as the QAnon shaman or whatever, clearly, his attorney has said he didn't have access to that information. He didn't have access to those videos. And so this needs to be exposed, and we need to find out what exactly happened on that day. And so more of the videotape information needs to be, I think it all needs to be made public so that all of our investigators, all of our amateur investigators throughout the country can start combing through that and getting more information out. Yes?
On that, Bill, you were just talking to us about the Native American tribes being able to lease their land for longer. Did I hear you say that the head of that committee or something, a Democrat on that committee, co-signed?
They are going to co-sponsor my bill.
Co-sponsored. How did you get a Democrat to co-sponsor it? Why would he want to?
Because it's a really good idea.
That doesn't wash for me, I'm sorry.
Well, the tribes really want it. We had a lot of tribes come in, and then I've met with the youths. I can't even tell you the number of tribes.
What would motivate them? Why would they think it's a good idea? Don't they usually think anything that's a good idea isn't?
Well, I think that you make a good point, but I think that we are to the point with this that the pressure would be too much. And the tribes so desperately need that if we're going to give them the autonomy to be able to thrive and prosper. So I'm thinking that they also recognize that from the standpoint of what is in the best interest of our tribes, that they were willing to do it, and I think they would have all paid a political price if they hadn't.
Do you believe Democrats will vote it enough to get it in?
I do.
No.
And I think Joe Biden will sign it.
Why would he sign it?
Because, again, I think that it is because it is. So I'll give you an example of something that happened this week. Is today Tuesday?
Yeah.
Friday, I went to a bill signing. Congress oversees Washington, D.C., the District of Columbia. Their city council adopted a radical, radical, radical crime bill last fall. And it was so radical, Muriel Bowser even vetoed it, and they overrode her veto. One of my fellow Republicans, a very conservative Republican, put in a resolution to nullify that new crime bill. We got bipartisan support in the House. It passed the Senate, and Joe Biden signing it. Because the risk and the cost to not do so was higher.
And yet a Republican tried to get it not to...
The Republican is who got it through.
Oh, I see. Okay, I understood it the other way.
No, it was a Republican that got that bill through.
The conservative one, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, in fact, we were talking about saying, you know, on our bingo card, it never would have been, Andrew Clyde would have been the first person to get a bill through with Joe Biden in the 118th Congress, because he is considered to be very conservative. But he got that bill through because, again, it was the right thing to do, and the political cost was too high. Carjackings, murder, the crime rate in Washington, D.C. is through the charts. Yes, sir.
First of all, thank you for coming, and I also want to applaud you for everything you've accomplished so far and your efforts, and encourage you to please continue.
Thank you.
In Donald's efforts, because I know you've got a lot of pressure against you. After that, I want to, whether we're talking about the ATF, the FBI, NIH, all of these organizations, CIA, all of them, that we're trying to rein in. And in my opinion, what they do is they just deny, they don't answer, they're not forthcoming, they don't, the FOIA requests, they just don't do anything. What will change, what do you think will change if there is no accountability? And because in my simple mind, I think that there have been absolutely illegal actions and things that they have done, right on down to the January 6th committee. But without civil and criminal prosecutions, what incentive is there for them to stop doing it?
So I'm going to start out by saying one of the reasons that the 4,000-page omnibus spending bill, of which 18 Republican senators voted for in December, and my predecessor voted for as well, that 4,000-page omnibus spending bill that spent $1.7 trillion that we don't have, it tied our hands until September, and they did it intentionally. Mitch McConnell and people like that did not want the House to be able to use the power of the purse to stop these agencies from doing what they're doing. That's why it is so incredibly important that we use the appropriation and the budget process and make it clear to the Senate, we're not doing that nonsense anymore. Because you hold them accountable by cutting their funding. That's number one. That's one of the ways we'll do it, and that's why this budgeting process is so important. So that's one way to hold them accountable. Another way is this weaponization committee is exposing people, and I truly believe we have to be naming names. I talk about the FBI, but who I need to be talking about are people like Mueller. Mueller is a bad guy. Mueller is the person that stockpiled all of that power in the FBI back in Washington, D.C. It used to be that the field offices handled an awful lot of stuff, and that meant that the field offices in Wyoming and Nebraska and South Dakota, people who lived within those communities were the ones handling the cases. He sucked all of that back. After 9/11, they sucked all of that power back to Washington, D.C., and Mueller was a really bad guy. I don't care if they say he was a Republican or not, he was a really bad guy. And so there has to be accountability there. So number one, it's through the funding. Number two, it is naming names. When we find people, we can't just say the FBI did this. We need to specifically name people. And we have another amendment that we got through. It's called the Holman Amendment. That was another rule change. And what we can do is we can defund individuals. So if we wanted to go after one person who was being a bad actor, we can take their salary away under that rule. And then finally, I am kicking around an idea, and I don't know if we can do this or not, but I'd like to, is when these people come in and testify, what really annoys me, and I've done enough depositions of federal employees, this is what annoys me. These are the very top people making the decisions, and they say either, I don't know, I don't recall, or I don't remember. But then we really only have two answers. Like Anthony Fauci, he said, I don't know or I don't recall something like 157 times in a couple hour deposition. He knew everything that was going on. And so you have two choices with him. Either he's incompetent or he's a liar.
Right.
And that's what we have to go after them about. They're either incompetent or they're a liar. So one of the things that I'm trying to figure out if we can do is I want to introduce a bill that whenever those people come into a hearing in front of Congress and they sit there and say, I don't know and I don't recall, every time they say it, their agency loses $1 million.
Before before you let me go, and I don't want to take a whole lot of time, so I think that if you cut their funding, those agencies and the individuals I'm talking about, they're free to pursue more funding in other areas. And in my mind, the only incentive to stop doing bad things is to pay a price for it.
Yep.
And if we don't have any, if there are no consequences, I would venture to guess that we will not see any more whistleblowers. Because if the whistleblowers come forward and there's no consequence, those people that don't pay the consequence will go back and go after those whistleblowers.
So one of the things that the FBI has done when they do their whistleblower training, so if you work for the FBI, you come in and they teach you how to be a whistleblower. They give you the training that if you need to expose something, they teach you how to be a whistleblower. The same training also includes ferreting out people who are no longer loyal to the agency. So what you're saying is absolutely correct. That's why I say we have to name names. We can't just say the FBI did X. We have to identify within the FBI who did it and what the consequences will be. And I'll tell you, I'm all for that. There have got to be consequences for the things that have been happening in this administration and in the Obama administration. But even under Trump, the deep state did everything they could to undermine him. So, and I'm going to say something. There are a lot of really good federal employees out there that work in these agencies. I'm not painting a broad brush that every one of them are bad. But the point that I made when we were doing the Twitter files last week was that I always say, after the two gentlemen did their opening statements and talked about what they learned in the Twitter files, I said, I have always said that sunshine is the best disinfectant, and this place back here needs to be fumigated. So, yes, ma'am.
Just to let you know, before you answer any questions, I am retired military. This guy is too, so.
Thank you for your service. We have some great, both military as well as people who work in these agencies. I'm not painting a broad brush that they're all, but the leadership in D.C. is what the problem is.
Yeah. Right, and I agree with you. And I go to Arizona for 3 months every year. My kids live down there. That's where the jobs are, so, you know, that's where they stay. And I agree with you with the border and stuff like this because you hate to go anywhere because, you know, you don't know if you're going to get shot or whatever.
Over 10 times the population of the state of Wyoming has crossed that border illegally in the last 2 years.
I know that.
Over 10 times.
But the problem is when DIA comes in or whatever thing, they can only take them to the state line. And like if they take them to Colorado, they can't, and Colorado don't want them, they have to let them go.
They're flying them all over the country. They are flying them all over the country.
I know they're flying them, but I mean, like, if we want to get rid of them, and Colorado won't take them to transport them back to down south, well, what are we supposed to do?
It has been no. It is a crisis. It is a terrible crisis. It is a humanitarian crisis.
Uh-huh.
I would describe Joe Biden as the largest human trafficker and drug smuggler in U.S. history. It just is, and it is a tragedy beyond tragedies. It doesn't make any sense. Whenever you sit down and try to figure it out, it doesn't make sense. And I get that. There isn't an easy solution, but the easiest solution is we have to close that border. We just absolutely have to.
The problem is also we've let a lot of immigrants into the United States. I mean, like from Germany, I was in during the Vietnam War, and we brought Vietnamese over and stuff like this, you know.
So there are two issues. Immigration is one issue, the border is another.
Correct.
We should never try to make them one and the same, because then what we get is the only answer the Democrats ever have is we want comprehensive immigration reform. First of all, if anybody uses the word comprehensive, run the other way. because it isn't going to be good. So the border issue is separate from immigration.
They come in and like they put them on welfare and all this and that just drains our funds.
Well, and as William F. Buckley said, you can either have an open border or a welfare state, but you can't have both.
Right.
One's going to break the other. So we get that. That's why I think that there is a yet another hearing this week down in Texas on the border. We're trying to expose it. We're trying to get people to understand the magnitude of it. And it is huge. We know that it is suppressing wages. I believe it was last month there was a pretty positive jobs report issued where there were, 300,000 jobs created. Mm-hmm. The vast majority of those were with illegals.
Well, so the young kids don't work.
We're suppressing wages. It's affecting the poor and the middle class. Every single bad aspect of it is bad policy. It is. Sir, yes, right here.
I just wanted once again to say thank you for being here. But what I've heard from you tonight has actually given me a sparkle of hope.
Me too.
That I did not have before I walked in that door. So I really want to thank you for that.
We're working. We really are. There are some good people in D.C.
We do not know what's going on up there with the media at all.
And it's
one of the conservatives are not reporting what you're telling us.
Well, and it's one of the reasons why I feel so strongly about coming back and doing these kinds of town halls, because we need to give people hope. You need to understand that I am working with some really good and smart people who want to solve these problems. One of the things that has surprised me about this job is I've been a hard worker. I'm a hard worker. I am stunned at how hard we work when we're trying to do it the right way. From 8 o'clock in the morning until 10 o'clock at night, almost every single day. And it is a half an hour meeting here, 15-minute meeting there. I run from oftentimes my Judiciary Committee and my Natural Resource Committee have hearings at exactly the same time. And I run back and forth and run over here and vote, or run over here and do my questioning, run over here, do my questioning and vote, back and forth. One of the last votes we did on the rules package for the oversight package for the judiciary, I was literally sprinting down the hallway to get my vote in, and I was the last person to get my vote in. They were just about to close it. I mean, it's very fast-paced, but there are people who want and know what the solutions are, and there are people who want to implement them. We have some roadblocks, I get that, but we have to just keep fighting on these issues.
No, we appreciate your efforts.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
What's happening with the World Health Organization and Biden?
We have to stop that. Yeah. I think it very clearly is a treaty. He does not have the legal authority to enter into those. The presidents, over the last many presidents, have been entering into side agreements with other countries and claiming they're not treaties. Something that would have this kind of an impact, there's no question in my mind that it is a treaty. It will end up in a lawsuit if he tries to do it. If you don't know what she's talking about, it is to turn over all authority during the next pandemic to the WHO. I do think that every single day that more stuff is exposed about the COVID-19, every day that we're getting more information about where it originated, the misinformation, the lies about treatment, the destruction to our businesses that was unnecessary, the damage to our kids, the side effects of the virus. Every single day that goes by, I think, exposes something new and undermines the WHO. There has been a bill introduced to declare that it is that any agreement with WHO is a treaty, so it must be treated as such and would have to be approved by the Senate, which they don't have the votes to do that right now. Keep in mind, they're short two Democrats right now. They don't have a majority. Mm-hmm. They've got two people in the hospital, Dianne Feinstein and that tall guy. What's his name? Fetterman. Yeah. So
if he's still in the hospital.
Yeah, we have to fight that. We have to fight that. I think they're waiting until they can get a special election fast-paced, or try to get a special election under Pennsylvania law to do whatever they need to do to replace him. I don't know if he's capable of coming back.
The rumor is that they're just keeping him alive and not have to do this.
One more question here, and then I know there's...
Wouldn't it be better to oppose that based on the fact that it goes against our sovereignty? Would it definitely...
That's the point of the... That's the whole point of the... from the standpoint of the treaty. Yes, I agree with that, but the mechanism to stop it is to say that it is a treaty that would have to be approved pursuant to our Constitution.
What if it's approved?
It wouldn't be. There's not enough Democrat senators. Not right now. They don't have two-thirds. And it would have to be two-thirds approval in the Senate for it to be approved as a treaty. So it can't just... We can block it. That it's going to end up in court if he tries to do it, and I don't know if that would immediately go to the U.S. Supreme Court or not. I'd have to see if that would be an original jurisdiction action, but it clearly violates our sovereignty. He doesn't have the legal authority to do it. I mean, heck, he doesn't have the authority to discharge student loans. He sure as heck doesn't have the authority to turn over our entire sovereignty to an organization that's controlled by China.
So there's very fast thing.
Right here.
I'm going to bring something that maybe hasn't been brought up, but I think it's something massive that's on the horizon, and that's the AI. And there's a fourth industrial revolution coming, and I feel like it's going to absolutely change our world. They're saying that ChatGPT, so it's exponentially growing. They're putting it out there so it can have billions of interactions with people who are using it, like new search. And they're saying that it has like an awareness of other people's feelings, that it used to be a number two. It's called MOT test, and now it's a number, I think they have it up to like a five, which is an age-old understanding the feelings of others. They can put all the books that have ever been written and rated whether or not they're bestsellers, and it will write bestsellers, so it will get rid of authors. It can create. What I'm saying is that it's going to eliminate our jobs.
It's going to eliminate humanity.
Yeah.
So I am not on the subcommittees that are looking into that. We have a science committee that I am sure is looking into that. I know that there are other people with the background related to that. The only one where it would potentially be related to what I'm doing is under the Judiciary Committee. There is a patent and trademark subcommittee being run by Daryl Issa. And I know that Thomas Massey is also pretty involved in looking at this stuff. I haven't been, other than reading and trying to educate myself, but we absolutely have to stop it, and maybe in our next conference I could raise that issue. I received an email today that they want to know some of the issues we're concerned about. I will include that one as one that we're very concerned about. Yes, ma'am.
So my husband and I, we moved to Wyoming here last January from a very business state. Main reason was because it became so liberal that it drove us out. In fact, I lost my job over the COVID. My religious exemption was denied. And so we felt like Wyoming was our last stand.
Yeah, so a lot of us feel that way.
We got California. We got away from the crazy Oregon. And my main concern is, you know, Republicans are always willing to compromise.
Yeah.
Or we need to be hardliners.
Yes.
Do not compromise ever with the Democrats.
Yep.
They seem to always stick together. And I feel like in Wyoming that we are doing a very slow creep into purple state life.
Yep.
Because even our local representatives, I feel, are very, because I'm new. But I took my time and I reached out to people to find out who is who, how do they vote, and things like that. And our local representatives are under a guise that they're Republican,
right?
But they're not.
Yep.
And so how do we combat that? And do you believe in term limits?
Vote them out.
We can't. They keep getting voted in.
No,
so that's why. Do you believe in term limits?
No, but let me tell you. Let me answer your question on a couple of things. You probably saw that I called out some of our leaders in Cheyenne.
Yes, thank you.
Because they are not putting forth bills that the people of this state want. And the three that were at issue were a school choice, and the not doing a transgender treatment on minors below 18, and the third one was. Which one was it? No, it wasn't that one.
That care for that was vaccine.
The vaccine. Yep, that's exactly right. So I called them out. The reality is, you've got to be involved with your local party. You've got to be involved with things like this. So I'm going to tell you that if you want to change what's going on in Cheyenne, you guys have the power to change what's going on in Cheyenne. You can beat the liberals in our House and our Senate, but you have to expose their voting record. You have to pay attention.
Voting with Democrats.
So here's
the thing. You have to beat them in the primary.
You have to beat them in the primary.
You beat them in August of 2024.
That's right. You beat them in the primaries, just like I beat Liz Cheney in the primary.
Against him. And that's
the conservatives picked up 10 or 12 seats in 2022.
Yep,
we got to pick up 10 or 12 more in 2024.
Yep, I agree. So that's going to change things. I agree with you on that. So right now, the Freedom Caucus is almost 30 people, which has never happened in Wyoming before. One of the problems that we suffer from in Wyoming is we're a one-party state. And because we're a one-party state, the Democrats run as Republicans. It's just the reality of where we are, and we know that. Here's why I don't agree with term limits. Because my biggest issue, one of the biggest things that I have fought for, is the Constitution. The Constitution has separation of powers. The only body that should be legislating is the legislative branch. That's why I'm fighting against regulations. That's why I've been fighting federal agencies for the last two decades. I have been doing that as an attorney, and it's what I'm doing as a member of Congress. You put in term limits, all you've done is empower the executive branch and the administrative agencies at the expense of the legislative branch. You limit your Congress members or your people down here to 6 or 8 years. The only people who are going to have the institutional memory will be the people in the agencies. It will weaken the legislative branch, not make it stronger. So in Wyoming, we got to defeat people in the primary. But the thing that happened this legislative session is a lot of stuff got exposed, didn't it, David?
It's not
been exposed before. People had to take tough votes. And you're right. Your representative is voting with Democrats. Okay, call him up and tell him you don't want him doing that. Call him to task. Hold him accountable. Hold them all accountable. That's the way we do it. We're going to take back the House. We are. But that's the way we have to do it. And we're making a lot of progress. Okay. Yes, sir.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for coming and visiting with us. I agree 100% with you on term limits. Everybody thinks that's the answer. I was down in Cheyenne myself.
Yes, you were.
And that isn't the problem with the legislator. It's the bureaucrats that down below. And I tried to correct some things. They just sat back. They ignored me because they knew they were in there for the long haul, 20, 25 years, the heads of the departments. And I got defeated. So they went on their merry little way, and they got what they won, and they have no way to get back at it. We do not need term limits. It's really scary, but people think it's the total answer.
No. So the other thing is that I am a co-sponsor of what's called the RAINS Act, and there are some other things that I'm going to push forward with this. But the most important aspect of that, in my opinion, is that this is Congress, not the State House. I think the State House should have something very similar, or the State House and Senate, excuse me, the state legislature. But that is that any regulation that would have an impact of over $100 million cannot go into effect until it is approved by Congress. And that gets the vast majority of these regulations. Just as an example, I sued the USDA a couple of years ago because they adopted a guidance document. It wasn't even a rule. It was a guidance document that said all of our livestock producers have to use RFID ear tags, radio frequency ear tags, and register their ranches with the federal government. That document, it was a two-page document that they posted on their website. That requirement would have cost our industry $2 billion. I got it stopped, and I'm going to try to get it stopped legislatively so that they can't do it again right now. That's something we're working on. But that is an example of how they do regulations or guidance documents that have that kind of an economic impact. That's what I mean about the separation of powers. That's the start, that we do not allow any regulation to go through with that kind of an economic magnitude unless your representative has voted on it. We need to probably do the same thing in Cheyenne.
Yeah, we do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we do.
Yes, sir.
Going back to your first comment about 15 votes, can you highlight a little more of what was gained? Because I know that 20 holdouts were trying to get things. Can you expand a little, maybe, if they did get some concessions or not?
I don't know that there was a lot that changed.
Okay.
There wasn't a lot that changed. I think that I think there were a lot of strategic reasons to do what they did, and again, I think the outcome has been very, very positive. So I think that's what I would say about that is it was an opportunity for us to show that, how would I put it, that McCarthy's going to be held accountable for his decisions, and I think that that was extremely important. I know there were people in Wyoming who were texting me and emailing me in all caps and bold. They didn't necessarily agree with what I was doing, but I have made a commitment, and I felt it was the right thing to do, and I did what I I made the decision I thought that I needed to make at the time, and I think it was the right one.
You convinced me.
We have time for one more
right here.
I've been watching the judiciary hearings so much I could get in trouble, but I mean, it's obvious. A.G. Garland and all them guys are just lying through their teeth.
Oh, yeah.
What's he going to say? And really, I don't see how there can be any accountability. I mean, yeah, it's been proved, but everybody pretty much that has their eyes open knows this. They're lying, and they're guilty of hiding and obstructing. What can we expect?
So one of the things they're trying to do is get, I think, $450 million new FBI headquarters. We're trying to hold that up. We're trying to hold that up until we get some answers to some very important questions that we're putting forward. I don't know what the status of that is now, but that's something that has been pushed out there to try to, and I do think that they probably got some pretty nasty environment that they work in. I don't care. But that's one of the things that we're trying to do is hold that up. We had another situation where they needed like $28 million for rent. We're trying to hold that up until they start producing the documents that they're required to produce. Janet Yellen has now agreed she is going to give us the suspicious accounting reports from Hunter Biden. She's been withholding those for a year. There's over 100 suspicious activity reports from his foreign dealings. Just yesterday it was exposed that one of the people that was hired by him, as soon as he came back from one of his trips abroad, they started laundering money through one of his cohorts. So, you know, and I think some people will say Hunter Biden isn't the president, doesn't have anything to do with him. His father is compromised.
That's right.
And we all need to understand to what extent foreign policy is being dictated by what they have on Hunter Biden. So with China, Ukraine, what you could hit on a lot of issues, but that's the reality is we need to find out to what extent he is compromised by foreign governments. And cartels or whatever else. I mean, their GDP for the cartels rivals lots of countries, dwarfs lots of countries. When we just saw the two people killed last week down in Mexico just going down for a medical procedure, I mean, that was just such a tragedy. We now have three women missing from Texas who went down to visit family, and they're missing. That's just a drop in the bucket, but it is, like I said, there are 200 dead people across from that wall, and my understanding is they most likely were killed.
So, I'm sorry, I know that was supposed to be the last question, but
very like we had some independent
eye of rule. So when you do get that information and it is proven, beyond any shadow of a doubt, that Joe Biden is compromised, who will ask the question, what constitutes treason?
Yep,
exactly.
I don't know the answer to that. I don't want to get ahead of myself. I don't want to start. I think that what we need to do is we need to get it out there just like you do with the videotapes, and then you follow the evidence and you go where it's gonna lead you. Even the mainstream press is being forced to cover stuff that they don't want to cover. Right? We just. Give us some time. It's only been 2 months. Give us a little bit of time. And I can assure you that we are working very, very, very hard to expose what needs to be exposed.
We are going to break, but we'll have time to come down and visit with Harriet before we completely leave for the night. And then we'll visit with press. And then we're going to try to maybe we'll allow her to eat tonight, but then Harriet has to be off to Sheridan. So,
can I make one quick announcement? If you'd like to ask your Representative Barry Crago some questions tomorrow evening, he will be at the Republican Women Freedom Alliance meeting at the library at 5:30.
Amen.
Go.
Yeah,
go.
Yeah.
The library has got to know why the mayor and the, all the other representatives and everything in Buffalo are not here tonight.
Well, they're
rhinos.
Look around the room. The people that aren't here are rhinos.
The newly elected chairman for the county GOP should be here, and he's not.
Right.
You know, it depends on where I go as to, there's great turnouts. This is a fabulous turnout. I very much appreciate you all coming out. I know you're probably wanting to go home and eat your own dinner and go to bed and all of that. So I do appreciate you coming out. I want to make sure that you have access to me. This is Trinity. Many of you know her. She's my state director. You have any questions? We have three offices right now. We have Cheyenne, Casper, and Gillette. We are going to be opening more offices in the western part of the state, but I needed to get my legs under me. You know, I've not done this before, and I wanted to make sure that I was being responsible in terms of where do I need people, what are the issues, that sorts of thing. You can go to our website. You can get a hold of us if you've got IRS issues or passport issues or any other federal issues. Then call us, and we will try to help you. We're here to serve you. We're here to serve you. I do a lot of work in D.C., but whenever I'm off, I'm here. So we're usually there about 2 weeks, and I'm home for a week to 10 days in between.
We have problems at the VA. Can we call you?
Absolutely.
Yes. I have cards down here, and I have information.
How can we best support you, the people that are in this room?
Talk to people, and the fact is I'm going to have to make some really difficult votes. Just like with the speaker. There were people who were pretty angry with me about that, and I've had the opportunity to talk to them, and they said, we didn't know that was going on. The behind-the-scenes stuff that were going on during that time was very, very difficult. One gentleman, one of our fellow members, his mother died, and he was potentially going to miss the funeral. We did our last vote. We got sworn in at 1:41 in the morning on Saturday, the 7th of February. That was the day of his mother's funeral in Arkansas. He had to jump on a plane and get over there. He was potentially going to miss it if we had to keep going. One gentleman had a premature little baby boy, Wesley Hunt, and that baby was a month early, but his wife started having complications, so he flew to Texas. The reason we came back into session at 10 o'clock at night that last night was because they had to send a plane to Texas to get him back here. Same with the gentleman from Colorado, Ken Buck. He got sick, so he went home. They sent a plane to get him. Because we had to have the votes. There was a lot of emotion. There was a lot of stuff going on. And so when I make difficult votes and you've got a question, get a hold of my staff. But understand there's a lot of things coming at us. There are a lot of reasons as to why I may do what I do. We've got the NDAA coming up. We've got the Farm Bill coming up. We've got some things that we're going to have to fix our spending problem in Washington, D.C. The collapse of the bank this week demonstrated that when you are $32 trillion in debt, you have very little flexibility to move when you need to move to stop a catastrophe. And that's where our government is right now. Our federal government has no flexibility. Our federal government doesn't have a lot of wiggle room to try to solve really serious problems because they're wasting all their time on nonsense. And that's why some of my votes you're all going to agree with, some of them you're not. But just understand, I really am studying things and trying to understand the best way to go.
Thank you. Thank you.